Welcome to the Love to Work podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Longman, and I help people like you to craft a career that you love. This podcast was born out of a research project that I started to better understand how people I work with create fulfilling careers when others hate what they do. I heard so many interesting stories that I wanted to share them more widely. In each under 30 minute interview, you'll hear tips and ideas from people who've created careers they love that you can apply to make your work life one that fills you up. If you'd like to learn more about the Love to Work or about me, head over to letslovetowork.com. Hope you enjoy the show. In today's episode, I'm speaking to Richard Bennett, a consultant, coach, and international traveller. Richard began his career at Marks & Spencer's in the 1980s and followed an internal path to development within his company. But then he wanted to do something different. So prompted by his manager and his wife, he decided to spread his wings and try some new experiences. He hit a few roadblocks along the way, and he talks about how he overcame these challenges while staying true to his core passions as he built his career. Richard's story is a prime example of how your early experiences and the chances you take at the beginning of your career can help to shape your whole working life. You never quite know where life will take you, but staying true to what you love makes for an exciting and fulfilling journey. Enjoy the show.
I run a small practice and I offer business advisory, management consulting, coaching, mentoring, psychometric services. I started off my career with Marks & Spencer many years ago in the late 80s, where I moved around a lot with them. Windsor, Belfast, Liverpool, Marble Arch for 3 years, did a couple of deputy management appointments in Ipswich and Norwich. When I was sort of sat down by the CEO and said, you know, you've done okay, but you've only ever done the shop bit. And if you want to continue to be successional in this organisation, you've got to look at international, you've got to look at head office, divisions, and you've also got to look at HR and finance, one of those two. So I sort of set about quite logically, I think when you're in your 20s, you're very much probably more doing as you're told than maybe thinking things through. So I had some really good guidance and he became a mentor. And the next international opportunity that became available, I applied for, and I ended up being the country manager of Greece and the Greek Islands for Marks & Spencer. And it was a brilliant period of growth. I was able to do all the island strategy, all the island growth plans and the cube expansions on the mainland. It was the first time I'd ever line managed all the functionality, whether that's logistics, marketing, buying, selling, HR, IT. I often used to say to Marks & Spencer, would you have let me loose at all of this stuff at this stage of my career in the UK? And they always used to sort of giggle about it. But it gave me a really good grounding, and it got me a taste for what was to become later quite a taste for international working and working with different cultures and different countries. I then came back and I made the decision that I would do my lateral development that he'd spoken to me about in human resources rather than necessarily finance. So I did my first HR appointment, which was around, it was succession and manpower planning through a big period of change in the late 90s. So I learned quite a lot about organizational design and employment policy and employment standards, went back out into the business, back into commercial roles, was asked to come back to program manage the learning and development department, where I was lucky enough to be trained as an internal executive coach. And that probably got me a flavour and a taste for coaching and mentoring people. And it probably, this whole piece around going into that department when there was, after a huge period of change within the organisation, also got me a bit of a taste for change management. Went back out into the business, was lucky enough to be part of the Simply Food team. So that was about developing a new brand within a brand, and then was invited back in by the HR director to lead the recruitment function, to be the group head of recruitment for the business, which I think, again, through a big period of change, we were changing CEOs, we had huge board attrition, but it was a fully accountable role down to sort of hourly paid. So I think when you do a job like that, you meet a lot of headhunters, you start to benchmark yourself a little bit against candidates. And also, my wife, she's got a master's in human resources, and she was always sort of challenged me, you know, you're gonna stay at this company for forever. You've done half your life there. maybe it's time that you had a bit of a think. And it was one of those sort of situations over Christmas and New Year. I did have a bit of a think, put myself on the market with some people that I really trusted. And I thought, if I do make a change, I need to do something that's not the same with a different brand above the door. So I wanted a private organisation. So I went to be the retail director of Spar UK, which had a very interesting shareholder structure. So that gave me a level of complexity and gave me a level of experience within a privately owned organisation. I worked for them for 6 years. I then spent some time as director of a leisure company. I was a chief operating officer of a stationery company. And I applied for a job, or I applied to be the managing director of the Early Learning Centre. And the CEO at the time, he looked at it and my CV on a long list and said, "This guy's international experience is out of date." And again, quite responsive. And at this point, I thought, right, I'm actually going to start my own business. I'm going to do commercial contracting. And I'm going to try and get some international experience under my belt. So I set up Richard Bennett & Associates in 2013. And then I got a long-term contract for a company called Petromin in Saudi Arabia. It's previously owned by Aramco. One of the roles I did for them, I developed a brand from scratch. So for me, it was startup again. I'd had the experience of startup within Simply Foods at Marks & Spencer, within a brand. And this was a real sort of startup because there was no downstream business. So I think what I'm starting to learn, I really enjoyed startup. I really enjoyed change and transformation. They were the things that excited me, the whole strategic intent about what you can create if you put your mind to it, but also collaborating with people along the way to help you make something really brilliant happen. So I did that for a period of time. And then my next contract was supporting a conglomerate family business based in Bahrain, but had operations in the UAE. And that was about financial turnaround. And then it was sort of a time appropriate from a family perspective to make my way back to the United Kingdom. And I came back to the UK and started thinking, do some more short-term contracts. And again, most of my work is currently international. Some of it's based in the UK. So a lot of my coaching clients are still based in the United Kingdom. But I've spent some time over the last 2 years in Australia, in Central South America, Puerto Rico, Panama, Guatemala, South Africa, Angola, Zambia, a lot of time in Geneva, and indeed London. So I'm still spending most weekends at home, but I'm still sort of got that international bent to what I do and the sort of services I provide. And you know, I'm supporting commercial people with their commercial strategies, but also supporting a newly appointed HR director at the moment in developing his strategic plans. So the work is quite varied. I still very much enjoy the one-to-one coaching piece, and you know, I do believe in lifelong learning. So I signed up for a few years ago to the Henley Business School Certificate in professional executive coaching. So again, you don't just do it, I think, to get the qualification. I think it refreshes your skills, it lets you revisit what you think you're good at, and then you know that there's new things you can do. But it also introduces you to other people, your cohort, and again, I think you can learn a lot from the people that you work with. Very much believe in working that people work for people and people work with people. And you sometimes come across somebody you think, "I'd really like to work with you, but I've absolutely no idea what we're going to do together." And somebody I've met along the way over the last couple of years, we've got a business idea, and before the COVID-19 crisis, we had a bit of a plan of how we could do a separate business together. I'm still very much, I enjoy the three strands of what I do, and I enjoy the flexibility that working for myself sort of gives me. I think that sort of summarizes where I'm at the moment. I think moving forward over the next, 5 years, I've just turned the magic 50, and I'd still like to keep that mix of of business advisory, coaching, mentoring, and the international piece going, because it does, you know, my life might be hectic at times, but it's certainly not boring.
No, it definitely isn't boring. So I kind of want to flip back to the point where you said you applied for a role at Early Learning Center to be the MD there. Yeah. And they said to you, you didn't have the international experience that was late. So that's kind of what propelled you to where you are now, right?
Yeah, because I think sometimes if people give you feedback, you have a choice, don't you? You can listen to it and reflect on it and act upon it, or you can make the judgment that it's irrelevant and dismiss it. And I've made, you know, there was the CEO of Mothercare at the time that owned Early Learning Center. He was from a digital background. And the fact that he just said to the headhunter, this guy's international experience is out of date. And at the time, I'd come back from Greece 15 years before. So, you know, maybe 15 years is a long time. And and certainly when I was talking to other headhunters about, well, you know, let's get some international contracting on the go, they got the logic. You know, this has been pointed out to you, and you're actively exploring it. Because I think a bit like when I was at Marks and Spencer, kept being brought into the HR roles, but always wanting to go back to the commercial business so that you keep up to date with commercially what's going on, so that you can say that you're current and what you deliver is current.
I think what's interesting is that you said you did that in 2013, so it's been 7 years now, and it looks as though you haven't decided to go back to working for other people, and that you've now developed this thing for yourself and you're continuing on that road.
Yeah, and I think when you first start your own business journey, you don't know what it's going to look like. Like, I remember when we'd registered the business with the company's house, and we'd been to the bank and got the bank account. I remember standing in our kitchen and I said to my wife, we've got a limited company. And she looked at me and went, yeah, and what's it going to do? You know, really good questions. Yeah. And my answer was, I've absolutely no idea at the moment. But, you know, you start off with some long-term contracts that have a timeline, a beginning, a middle and an end. And then, you know, you get a level of, I suppose, confidence, new experiences, and then you can start to do some more short-term stuff. And what it means is you don't have to commit to somebody full time. So, you know, my coaching piece is really important to me. So, you know, I will coach people that somebody that, you know, is a private equity house in a very, very busy senior role. But I'll also coach somebody who I would say is early years, somebody I've been coaching for about 4 years through leaving university, getting their first job, looking at what they want to do for their next job. Supporting them in some of their pre-appraisal discussions, their salary negotiation discussions. And, you know, so you go on a journey with people. So for me, coaching different styles of people, different age groups of people, people that are in different industries, again, I find that really, really interesting and really motivating.
What drives you? Is it the work, or is it something outside of the work?
I think you get to a certain age and you think you almost deserve to do something that you enjoy, and you deserve to get perhaps more job satisfaction than you would have done in your 20s and 30s when you're climbing that corporate ladder. And you know, I was very lucky in the first corporate position that I job role that I had, I managed to gather a lot of experiences that I could put in my back pocket, and a lot of skills that you can put in your back pocket, and you might not necessarily use them all immediately, but certainly with what I'm doing at the moment, all of those things can come back to the forefront and very front of mind, and you can use them with clients and use them to support other people on their journeys. I'd like to think I love to see talent develop. I love helping individuals and businesses increase their global capability and hopefully get them in shape to deliver some really, really good commercial results. And, you know, I think I enjoyed it's quite interesting, you know, having done sort of senior leadership roles, main board director roles, CEO roles. It's quite nice to be able to just support other people sort of in the background and back of house. In helping them become successful.
I agree with you. I think it is lovely to see other people grow and also to be growing yourself at the same time.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I think the lifelong learning thing. So, you know, I'm collecting things at the moment. I'm collecting psychometrics. So I've become a Myers-Briggs practitioner. I've become a Hogan psychometric practitioner. I'm in the process of becoming a StrengthsFinder coach. I'm still learning myself, but learning and getting tools that can help clients and help individuals with their growth.
What is your perspective on this idea of continual learning, and do you think that's important for loving what you do?
Yes, I absolutely do. And if I'm honest with you, when I was looking at doing some new coaching qualifications with Henley, one of my mentors said to me, "You know, you've been doing this for years. Why do you want to go and do that? Do you need to?" And I spoke to a couple of other people and who'd actually done it, who are, you know, mentors that I've worked with and worked for in the past, and they did exactly the same course. And you know, and do you know what? You can teach an old dog new tricks, and it helps you refresh. You know, if I look back at my last formal training was 19, 20 years ago, and things change. There's new models, there's new ways of looking at stuff. I often will sign up for just a couple of days to go and learn something new. So
your career, when you described it at the beginning, you made it sound quite effortless, actually. you know, you kind of jumped from one thing to another, and it sounded very exciting and you were very passionate about it all. So tell me, what challenges did you face on that journey?
I think it was about being very, very focused. So it wasn't effortless at all. And I think when you're early 20s, you're in a corporate organization and you started on their management training program, and there is that corporate race to success and race for promotion. Yeah. And what are your points of difference to get promoted? What makes you different? Gives you that, you know, hairline edge over the next candidate, so you get that promotion. I was in a situation where, you know, you create your own conditions to look ahead and make sure you are successful and you do have that edge. So it wasn't effortless at all. I can assure you. And there was certain, you know, I think, you know, people work for people. And you know, I do reflect and think, you know, working for poor managers, poor leaders, and I say this to my client base, you know, you learn so much through working for bad leaders as you learn from working with great leaders. So they're not wasted experiences. But you know, sometimes, you know, the chemistry between myself, my line manager, my boss, it probably wasn't there. And you know, I generally still believe that people work for people, and sometimes that doesn't work, and then you have to manage your way out of that to another role that does work.
This idea of managing your way out of it, what would be your strategies for doing that?
I generally think you can, if in your heart of hearts you actually think this isn't working, and you know, you can throw the kitchen sink at it, but if the chemistry's not there, is it ever going to work? With as many one-to-ones, as many discussions, as many this, that, and the others, and as you know, throw as much employment law, employment standards at it as you can. Development programs, appraisal processes. If it's not really going to work, then it's almost like, well, look, we'll just tick that one down from experience, and let's go and exit, and let's go and look at doing something else. And I know that probably might not be the most PC way of doing it, but I do think that sometimes that's probably better for the individual and better for the organization or the role that you're in.
What would you suggest to someone based on your experiences to do if you don't necessarily have the confidence to go out and do something different, if you kind of feel stuck?
Then it might be about don't do something different, but it might be go to a competitive organization, but do a very similar job. So, and you know, different folks, different strokes. You know, a number of people left Marks and Spencer in the mid-2000s. They went to Sainsbury's, and it was a very similar role with a different brand above the door. Similar things went on, and that was their confidence level, and they felt confident to do that. They felt they'd made a move. They felt they'd made a change. But it was probably quite a similar situation.
One of the things you mentioned at the beginning as you were talking through your background was, in more recent years, you've decided to move some more of your work back to the UK to be around your family a bit more. Mm. So tell me, what part then does work play in your broader life?
I would say that I'm very lucky that I allow it to dominate my life because I enjoy it. My family would say, you know, even though I'm around at weekends and you know, I do the four dog walks on the weekend if I'm here, that it's still very much driven by me working because I enjoy it.
What do you know now that you wish you'd known at the beginning of your journey to creating this career that you love?
You mentioned confidence earlier. It's a difficult one because if I'd have had the confidence to run before I was ready, start my own business earlier, establish it earlier, and do all these extracurricular sort of qualifications earlier, then I could probably be more established. But then the counter to that is, would I have had all the business experiences that I've had along the way with people that you know have employed me under PAYE to bring that experience to the party? But I suppose it would have been, you know, maybe having the confidence at an earlier stage to run before I was ready and maybe set up on my own slightly earlier.
We can't really have a conversation without talking about the pandemic. Tell me, what impact is that having on your business right now?
Well, it's really interesting because a lot of my work is international, and even some of my coaching clients, you know, so I'm doing a coaching session tomorrow for somebody on FaceTime. I'm usually a face-to-face person, but when I know the client and I feel comfortable from a coaching perspective, we'll, you know, quite happily do FaceTime and do remote. And with the international work that I do, it doesn't really matter whether I'm sitting in Geneva, South Africa, the Middle East, or London, or the Home Office, because most of those calls are either, you know, VC Cloud or Skype anyway. So interestingly, you know, so the 5-hour team day I did a couple of weeks ago and a 4-hour one I did yesterday, they would normally have been a 2-day face-to-face, but we kept the agenda the same. We just took some pieces out. We did it over two separate sessions rather than two separate days. And, you know, we did it on Skype. Now, I do believe that, you know, the people in the business, in the client business, you know, that they have to, you know, play their part. And the first one, you know, it went really well, but it wasn't because of the way I facilitated it. It was because of the way everybody responded and to the change. You know, everybody was up for doing it, something a bit different that we're not used to doing. But you just have to make the best of it.
So do you think this is going to change the way you work? It sounds like you already work in that way anyway, but then you do travel a lot.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And I think, I've said to a number of clients, I think it will change the way people work. Why will people, after this pandemic, why will they reflect and think, do we need all this expensive office space? Yes. Do we need all this expensive office furniture? Do we need all this expensive IT equipment and all these massive screens? Or could we, you know, and I think there will always be a place for face-to-face. And that's my preferred way of working. But it doesn't mean to say I don't enjoy the remote piece, because I couldn't have all my conversations face-to-face. And it's been a bit of fun. You know, you see the pictures that people have on the wall behind them. You see their signed Liverpool T-shirts. You know, I saw a Steven Gerrard signature on a Liverpool shirt in Hong Kong this morning. You know, it's just, it's a bit of fun. You see people that you normally see in a shirt and a tie with a hoodie, a grey hoodie on. And, you know, so you see some different things, and it gets, you know, it develops relationships, I think, as well. You seeing people in a different light. So I do think that it will change the way people will work. if you look back at the way people changed their shopping habits in the financial crisis 2007, 2008, they shopped convenience little and often. 12 years later, people are, you know, if you look at what's growing in the grocery industry, it's online and convenience. Yeah. That is where the growth areas are. People are still 12 years later shopping little and often.
Where do you think you see yourself in the next few years?
I would probably see myself doing exactly what I'm doing now. Maybe a bit more time in the UK, coming up to sort of retirement and all that.
Can you imagine yourself retiring?
No, I can't actually. But I can imagine myself. I can imagine myself drawing a pension, and then being able to be super selective about the work you actually do and how many days a week, month that you actually want to put yourself out there for.
Yes. What advice would you give to someone who's starting out based on your experiences?
I think it's about being really clear with yourself about not just what you want to be in scope for your new job, but it's equally important to be really, really clear on paper for yourself what you do not want in scope and what you don't want to be part of that. Because I think if you compromise and you think, oh, well, you know, all these good bits over here will be fabulous, but, you know, I really don't want a job that entails this, but, you know, the money's great and the company's super and I'm going to get to live in the place I want to live, that thing will always be there and it could become your Achilles heel. And it mm-hmm. could be like a boil that just festers. And so don't compromise on the things that you really hate, you're really not good at, you know, that you really don't want to do. And don't chase the dollar just because, or the move because you want to get out and sign yourself up to something that could be just out of the frying pan and into the fire.
That's exactly the phrase I was thinking as you were saying that.
And sometimes that is really, really hard, because when you're being, you know, let's be honest, when you're being courted /groomed by headhunters, new employers, it's very, very flattering.
Yes.
Very, very flattering. But the reality of when you land on day one and that subject matter comes up and you've got to go away and do something that you might not be super skilled in, you don't necessarily have a team immediately you can delegate it to and create conditions that somebody else does it, or that indeed you overinvest time in doing that bit than the other bits that you really do enjoy, it might not necessarily work out for you in the best way that it possibly could.
What about if it was someone who was starting out in their career straight out of college or university? Or
the client that I've been coaching through what I call early years, he graduated maybe 22, he was 26 this week. So the first sort of questions I started asking him is, you know, what's your passion? What's important to you? So, you know, what to give away candidate, client confidentiality. But, you know, he really loves sport. He's an extrovert. He loves socializing. And, you know, he wants to earn money to get on a property ladder, have a family and all that sort of stuff. So then you can really start to get their minds thinking about where their best fit would be. And when they understand the type of role they will want to do, then you can start helping them and point them in the direction of certain organizations. And you have the conversation about, you know, do you want to go on a corporate graduate program where you will get some really, really sound grounding? And, you know, I always look at salespeople and sales directors, and the best ones I've ever come across, if you track back, they've all done an FMCG type of graduate training program. And they tend to produce the best sales directors. They might not have anything to do with FMCG now. So, you know, There's that thing about grounding and getting that real grounding in a corporate sort of postgraduate training scheme, to going off, if you are entrepreneurial, to go and work with some entrepreneurs that might be fabulous at what they do, but they might not be super great at managing a business. So, You know, don't expect it all to be perfect. So that would be the, you know, and it's almost, the question would be, you know, what do you think you can cope with?
Right.
How much inefficiency, if you go and work for an entrepreneur for for somebody that's in scale up, necessarily not startup, you know, how much inefficiency and effectiveness can you cope with? And if you can't cope with that, then maybe try it on the graduate scheme and get some skills under your belt, which then might enable you to be able to cope with slightly more dysfunctional environments at a later stage in your career.
Do you think anyone can find or create work that they love?
That is a real motherhood and apple pie question. And I think the honest answer is you can chase it. But I think it's about how hard and how much time you really truly invest in looking for it, because it probably won't land in your lap and it probably won't just come and find you. Yeah. So I'd like to think that everybody at some point in their life can find it. You know, I probably, you know, and as I say, I'm still growing. I'm still a lifelong learner. I'm 50. I've been working for all those, you know, around 30 odd years. And you know, I'm still finding, you know, still refining that equilibrium. You know, it sounds a bit cliche, but you'll probably get out what you put in. And if you put a load in, you might get something back that reflects something that you love.
Thank you for listening to the Love to Work podcast. If you'd like to keep up to date with Love to Work, you can follow me on Twitter at @RSG_consult, or you can find me on Instagram at Let's Love to Work. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Rebecca Longman, or you can check out the website, letslovetowork.com.